This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it's Wednesday, and I'm sorry to say it could be the end of the world. It could be over for you right now. Hey, well, it's not too late, but 10 years ago, Al Gore predicted that it would all come to an end. So if climate change alarmists are going to continue to make predictions, they could save themselves a good deal of embarrassment by predicting out into the future long after they'd be dead, and not while they're still here to be ridiculed. I mean, who could forget the incredibly wrong apocalyptic predictions on the first Earth Day in 1970. Of course, I try to remind you of those as often as possible. Among them, the end of civilization within 15 to 30 years. 100 to 200 million deaths every year from starvation. Urban dwellers, those of you in the city having to wear gas masks just to survive. And, of course, my personal favorite, the inevitable ice age by the year 2000. Of course, today's most famous climate alarmist, Al Gore, he made this prediction of his own 10 years ago, and the clock as well has just run out. On the 26th of January, 2006, the Washington Post reported that Al Gore, quote, believes humans may only have 10 years left to save the planet from turning into a total frying pan. I found a bit more on Gore's predictions on the Daily Caller. Now, I'm sure the people in New York City and L.A., or in New York City and Washington, D.C. and Baltimore are really concerned about global warming today as they dig out from 25 to 30 inches of snow. They just found a lady, by the way, that had been buried since Friday in her car. She's alive. Al Gore predicted when his film, An Inconvenient Truth, was first released at the Sundance Film Festival that the Earth would be in a, quote, true planetary emergency, end quote, within the next 10 years, unless drastic action was taken to reduce greenhouse gases. Does it feel like an emergency to you? Do you feel like you're in a total frying pan? Just checking. CBS News reported at the time that Gore's film predicted the worst-case scenarios would be a new ice age in Europe, massive flooding in China and India and other areas. Gore described himself then as a recovering politician to the Sundance audience, and that he benefits from low expectations. Well, he's right about that. So the next day, Rush Limbaugh started the Al Gore Armageddon clock, which just ran out. But don't laugh now. The world could be over shortly. I mean, who knows? Maybe he was off by a couple of days or something. So anyhow, this is it. I think, you know, I saw one of my friends on Facebook here, the Grumpy Farmer, said he was going to mark the occasion by having a big old grain-fed porterhouse steak and an imported beer. Now he's just getting fancy. Yeah, so the inconvenient truth is the global alarmists are wrong again. Wrong again. Isn't that weird? You know, you would think, you know, get ready. End of the world is, here it is. Well, gosh, I guess it didn't happen again. There you have it. So, okay, here's a cautionary tale for you. Cautionary tale from yesterday from Michigan. And I debated whether I should share the story with you or not, but if you're driving, please keep both hands on the wheel. 10-2 position. Eyes on the road. And scan from your left mirror to your rearview mirror to your right mirror. Keep your eyes moving. Be aware. Drive defensively. While you listen to this story, which again, I debated on whether I should share this story or not, but it's too much. It's too much. And if you have children in the car, you might want to turn this down for a moment because this next story might not be appropriate for listeners of all ages. I think that's fair. The Michigan State Police Department said yesterday that a man died after rolling his car on the ramp from the Lodge Freeway to I-75 because he was watching pornography while driving. Talk about survival of the fittest, selective reduction. The accident happened early on Sunday morning. They reported this yesterday. It happened early on Sunday morning, just after 3:30. Michigan State police troopers were called to the ramp on the Lodge to southbound 75 on a one-car accident. The preliminary investigation revealed the driver of the car was watching a movie while behind the wheel. He was not wearing a seatbelt when he lost control of his car. In fact, he wasn't wearing much of anything, we've come to learn. He was partially ejected through the sunroof. He died at the scene. They say the 58-year-old man was, well, not wearing pants at the time and may have been doing other things at the time of the crash. A little bit of advice for you. If you have an overwhelming need to watch movies of any sort, you may want to stay home to do that. But watching pornography while driving, it's not a good idea. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and saying driving with no pants, maybe not the best idea either. I'll consider that to be your tip of the day. If you need to find out more about what's going on with the Steve Gruber Show any given day, go to stevegruber.com. I've got a few things there for you. First of all, you've got the Listen Live button, so you can get stories just like this, which don't happen very often, thank God. You can get stories just like this, stevegruber.com. Go to the Listen Live button. You can take us to work, so you don't ever have to miss a minute of what's going on in the program. You can also find the posts that I write just about every day. So I've got different things going on every day. You could have found out about the Nancy Grace event there, and the CNN thing that I did yesterday. All of these things are available there. You can also find interviews and complete shows from days gone by. So if there's something that we talk about here or an interview that you hear and you want to go back and say, hey, I need to hear that again, no problem. Go to stevegruber.com, go to the podcasts, powered by Podbean, and you can get all the, you know, those back shows and back interviews and so forth, and the things you can share with your family and friends or whoever you need to share those with. So you can do that. Also, you can go to the Steve Gruber Show Facebook page, click like. Make sure if you do that right now that you vote in the Steve Gruber caucuses. Yeah, we've got voting up there for Republicans, 10 candidates there, 3 candidates on the Democratic side. Would love to get your vote in because we're going to run this for the next 4 or 5 days, and we're going to give you the results. I guess we'll do it on Monday at the end of the show. So you still have a chance to jump in, cast your ballot. Right now, Donald Trump with a slight lead among the Republicans, a lot of votes cast so far, and Martin O'Malley winning among the Democrats. It's the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world.
Mother, don't wanna go to school. All right, from the top of the pile of this is completely absurd stack of information. Apparently, Chris Christie is going to take on Michelle Obama when it comes to healthy eating. I'm sorry. That's too much. Yeah, Chris Christie is going to argue about healthy eating. When it comes to eating, I can find nobody else to turn to but my good friend Julie Gunlock, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Forum. Julie, welcome back to the circus.
Thanks for having me on.
Chris Christie, come on. I'm trying to be serious here. You're killing me.
Yeah. So he's trying to appeal to the sort of, you know, the parent groups and you know, strong moms and the small government types. So he came out and, you know, he railed against Michelle Obama's school lunch program, but he didn't sound that way a couple years ago when he praised the school lunch program. So I have a piece in National Review where I sort of point out his sort of his switch there.
BuffetWatch.com if you want to know more.
That's so mean.
BuffetWatch.com. Oh, so good mean. Lord, Chris, wipe your hands. I'm sorry, but come on. The 400-pound guy telling the rest of us, you know, we could ignore, you know, nutritional tips. You know, and I'm not a big fan of big government, nor am I a big fan of Michelle Obama's school lunch program, which has been a failure in a lot of places, according to people that, you know, actually have to eat it. But, you know, Chris Christie, probably not the guy. I'm just going to go out on a limb here. He should not go out on the limb, by the way. But I'm going to go out on the limb here and say he's probably not the guy that should be talking about health and nutrition. Just saying.
Well, the thing is he's talking more about right now, he's trying not to. He was asked about Michelle Obama's school lunch program, and he said, I don't care. He literally said this to the reporter. He said, you know, doesn't the president have more important things to think about than what you're eating for lunch? And, well, first of all, he's correct. Sometimes I am amazed when I write about these issues. I focus a lot on food issues. And I think about what our founding fathers would think about, you know, the president actually getting involved in these things and the government itself. I mean, from dietary guidelines to farm subsidies, I mean, the government is all about our food and trying to persuade Americans to eat in a certain way. So in some ways, he's starting to make a lot more sense. But he didn't sound that way 2 years ago when he praised Michelle Obama's school lunch reforms and sort of her tendency to take parents out of the picture in favor of government. Look, it's no accident that the rates of kids, well, recently, because the food has been so bad, there have been some kids falling off the rolls of the school lunch program. But initially, a lot more kids enrolled in the school lunch program, and that's not a mistake. That is by design. The government, specifically the Obama White House and the Obama administration, does not trust parents to feed their kids healthy food. They want the government to take over this role because they think a bureaucrat at the USDA is far better equipped to decide what your kid is going to eat than you. They don't like people packing school lunches for their kids. I mean, my goodness, a Twinkie might make it in there or a chocolate bar, something the USDA doesn't approve of. So, so actually, I would say Christie is making more sense, but again, it's certainly a flip flop on his part,
which is quite an effort. You see, I could go on all day.
You could.
I'm sorry. I mean, that's just mean.
I keep trying to change the subject.
But the distraction here is Christie himself, and that's why I say again, maybe he's not the guy to carry this message. You know, sometimes it's, you know, it'd like be Hillary Clinton holding a seminar on fashion. You know, there's just certain things that you just don't do, you know.
Favorite colored pantsuits.
You know, pantsuits in blue and green and red.
Yes.
You know, you see where I'm going. So, but you're right about this. I mean, the U.S. government historically has been off every single time when it comes to nutrition, just about every time. You know, they're wrong about cholesterol. They're wrong about salt. They're wrong about fat. And if they were really going to be intellectually honest about the food pyramid, the thing that is the enemy, it's not meat. It's not cheese, it's sugar. And so if you're going to be honest and intellectually honest about the thing that really causes problems with Americans, I mean, look at the incident of child obesity and diabetes. There's your problem. It's sugar. So if we're going to have a real conversation about it, it has nothing to do with school lunches. It has to do with the consumption of sugar, more specifically, high fructose corn syrup, which, by the way, is paid for with subsidies in large part by you and I, the taxpayer, too. You got it, the government, in the form of agricultural payments.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, the thing that frustrates me, too, is that, you know, a lot of people who comment on food issues, they don't actually have a problem with farm subsidies. I do, but they don't. They just want farm subsidies redirected. They don't want it going towards corn. They want it going towards lettuce and spinach and things that they deem are healthier.
Or something else, right.
Yeah, I mean, we just need to get rid of, like, the government involvement in agriculture like this, it really does mess up the marketplace, and it does create markets for things that normally wouldn't have markets.
You know, speaking of lettuce and spinach and all that, on this, the day, it's been 10 years now, that the Earth would be in a full-on crisis, Al Gore said. Today's the day. The world ends today.
Right, indeed.
Right, you know, so we should move towards. But I'm going to, you know, say that, you know, sometime soon we have Lierre Keith here on the program and talk about the vegan myth, the woman that was a vegan for years and nearly destroyed her health and almost didn't survive.
Yeah.
About lettuce and spinach and different things. Again, bringing me back to, and your point is exactly right, Julie, which is let your mom decide or your dad decide what you're going to eat in the house or whatever. The government doesn't have a f-ing clue what they're doing when it comes to nutrition, which they've proved time and again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that we need to, you know, conservatives often, you know, recoil at the phrase, we are snow, you know, you're a snowflake. And I agree when we're talking about, you know, people being treated super gently or not having to do certain things. But when it comes to nutrition, we are snowflakes. Each individual is we're all different. You know, we all have that friend who can seemingly eat endless amounts of pizza and never gain a pound. And equally, we have the friend who seems to struggle constantly with their health or their weight. No matter what they eat, they eat like birds and they still gain weight.
And that's where you have to figure it out for yourself. The government doesn't have a one size fits all. Anyhow, I have to run. Remember, if you want to find out more, it's buffetwatch.com. I'm kidding.
Thanks for having me on.
Julie Gundlach, one of my favorites, everybody, from the Independent Women's Forum. We'll be right back.
Come on, come on. Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
All right, welcome back to it on this Wednesday. You know, a lot going on. Don't forget to vote. Steve Gruber Show Facebook page. I'm counting on you. Make sure you get in line and vote. There you go. It's the presidential primary through the Steve Gruber Show on Facebook. Check it out. Right now, Donald Trump is leading, as is, strangely, Martin O'Malley on the Democratic side, but so it is. Charlotte Hayes joining me now, Director of Cultural Programs at the Independent Women's Forum and author of numerous books, including Lean Together. So let me ask you this. First of all, Charlotte, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I heard this conversation, and I think this is right up your alley. I heard people, I think it was CNN last night, arguing about the fact that, you know, they don't really care about gender. They care about who's going to be the leader of the free world. So I think this whole idea that somehow Hillary Clinton's going to get elected just because she's a woman seems to be fading a bit. Am I right or wrong about that?
It is fizzling. I mean, it's so amazing that that's what she calculated on. It makes a little bit of sense because, you know, President Obama was elected because America wanted to bury our past, our racist past, and that makes some sense. But this is fizzling, really fizzling, and there are a number of reasons for that. One reason is most people expect that there will be a female president in their lifetimes. It's no big deal. Of course there will be. And they don't want it to be Hillary Clinton. I mean, there's just not the kind of glass ceiling she thinks there is. And when she comes out and says, you know, I'm a woman, elect me president, you think, gosh, this is so 1960s, isn't it? And the other thing, my colleague Carrie Lucas did a big piece for the New York Post on how this is, in fact, fizzling. And there was an interesting Pew study of attitudes towards I hate the word gender, but I'm going to use it, attitudes towards gender. And basically, people, you know, think men and women are equal. There's an interesting sort of disconnect. Republicans think men and women do about the same kind of job. They're equal. And Democrats think they're a little bit better, i.e. guys are inferior. So, you know, that's interesting, but it's not enough to elect Hillary Clinton. And also, Hillary's past, you know, in the 1990s, everybody was willing to overlook Bill Clinton's sexual scandals and Mrs. Clinton's role in covering them up and sort of demonizing the women. Now, if I were a woman and somebody—I am a woman, by the way. If somebody had an affair with my husband, I would probably do the same thing, except for the fact that some of these gals were innocent women who had been, to use a euphemism, taken advantage of. So it's just not playing. Americans see women as qualified and capable, but that doesn't mean they're just breathlessly waiting for a female president. They know it'll happen.
No, I don't think so.
And when it happens, let's have somebody qualified. Let's at least have somebody who can keep up with her BlackBerry.
Yeah, she's no Margaret Thatcher.
She's no Margaret Thatcher.
You know, that. I mean, that people want to obsess about what she's qualified for. Well, you know, she was handpicked and delivered as a senator in New York, where, you know, basically a watermelon could have been elected as the Democratic candidate over any Republican in New York. You could elect fruit if you're a Democrat in that state. And then
she had a sympathy vote. Everybody thought, oh, poor Hillary, she's been wronged by her man. Let's make her a senator.
Well, the fact is, Lazio was never going to beat her, and neither was anybody else. And my point being, you literally could put, you know, a cantaloupe up there. It would have made no difference. Call them the Democrat. They would have won the election in the state of New York because of all the liberal Democrat voters. That's fine. Then she was handpicked to be Secretary of State, where her accomplishments are scant.
Well, I would say she, you know, if you want to talk about Hillary's resume, yeah, she's filled in some blanks, but by golly, she has never succeeded in a job. If you think she's a great Secretary of State, go see 13 Hours, please.
Yeah, then I don't think she's, you know, she's the person who wanted the call at 3 in the morning. When the call came,
she got the call at 3:45 in the afternoon, and we still don't know what she did the rest of that day. While Americans in her State Department, under her State Department, were dying in Benghazi.
Yeah, we will never know. If you want to know, we will never know.
Well, what difference does it make?
Yeah, we'll never know it because, and it makes a lot of difference. But we will never know. The point that I'm making here is this: you know, I have these conversations on social media. Well, she is by far the most qualified person in the race to be president. Well, it depends on what your qualifications are.
No. She is by far the person who's filled in blanks on a resume.
Right.
And if that, excuse me, Steve, if that's your qualification, sure. But if it matters whether or not she performed well in those jobs, then she's not qualified.
Yeah, because I would say, you know, I could even look at somebody like Chris Christie, federal prosecutor and governor, two-term governor of a state. I think that makes him more qualified because he's run something as opposed to being an appointee. I think that John Kasich, two-term governor and worked as a congressman for several terms, more qualified. You know, Jeb Bush, who's been a governor for two terms, you know, I think more qualified.
Well, I think anybody's more qualified, and most people don't run for president on the I have ruined the Middle East ticket.
No, but it's an interesting way to go.
I think, you know, it's really weird. I'm beginning to think that there's a chance she won't be the nominee. There was a great cartoon.
Oh, I've said that for a long time.
Great cartoon the other day. A butler's handing her breakfast and says, "Your toast, madam." And she says, "Quit saying that."
You know, well, here's the thing. I've said for a long time, I wrote it more than a year ago, that I found it unlikely that Hillary Clinton was going to be the nominee for a variety of reasons. We'll find out if I was right about
that.
What
were your reasons?
Well, the reasons are she's a damaged candidate. The reasons are that she was under investigation for some other things back then in Benghazi. Now the email thing has come to light. Now, here's what I think. There's been a lot of conversation about, well, what if the Republicans go to a brokered convention? What if the Democrats do? Because here's the thing. If Hillary is damaged to the point that she's unelectable, she won't make it. They won't allow Bernie to go through. So then, and I don't think it's going to be Biden either. I think that the Democratic nominee could well be somebody that hasn't been named yet or who's not in the discussion.
Elizabeth Warren?
Maybe. But I think more somebody middle of the road, even though he's not a great. I saw Evan Bayh on TV over the weekend. I said, you know, that guy there, former governor of Indiana, he would be the kind of guy that would be vanilla, right? It would be acceptable to a lot of people.
He's also probably the most boring guy in America. But I think that you're right that they could have a brokered convention. But I think that the Democratic Party has become so far left now that if they have a brokered convention, it ain't going to be somebody like Bayh.
Well, you might be right.
It will be Elizabeth Warren or somebody of that ilk.
They would benefit from having somebody boring, as you put it.
Well, they would benefit, but they're too left wing. I mean, this is the Democratic. It was left-wing when Obama ran in 2008, and he has moved it further and further to the left. I mean, Hillary is well, I think Hillary actually is a leftist, so I'm not going to go and say that he's moved her further to the left.
Right. No, I agree with that. And the ideology of the Democratic Party of the United States has become an ideology of Marxism in many, many ways, as you well know. Anyhow, so I believe it's entirely possible it won't be Hillary. I don't know who it's going to be. The point being is, I think that I'd say it's a 50-50 chance she won't be the nominee, because if she has indictable offenses and they do not follow through, that will create as many problems as if they do follow through.
Well, you know, Bernie went to the White House yesterday.
Oh, I know.
And I'm wondering what they talked about.
You know, his quiet exit from the race, I believe.
You think so?
Who knows? Charlotte, always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's have some more conspiracy theory talks next time around.
Okay.
Perfect. Charlotte Hayes, everybody, from the Independent Women's Forum here on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Tell me, doctor, where are we going this time?
All right, it's Wednesday. Thanks for dialing it in. Hey, for you guys up at Harbor Springs, thanks for listening. Appreciate the support from Harbor Springs to Houghton Lake to Harrison to every place in between. Marquette to Monroe. We covered. It's the Steve Gruber Show all across the state of Michigan. And just a special shout out to my friends there in Harbor Springs, quietly going about their business. Greatly appreciate that. Let's go to the hotline. We've got Larry from Perry checking in today. Larry, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning to you.
Welcome to it.
On my way to my new job at DEQ.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you got hired. Let's keep it straight in there. All right, what's on your mind real quick?
I'm just transferring over there temporarily. No, it says a lot about the Democrat Party voters when they're supposed to vote for Barack Obama because he's the first, we can elect the first black president. We're supposed to vote for Hillary because we can elect the first woman president. Don't these people think at all?
No. They think that these things matter more than ideas, and frankly, they don't. Larry, I got to jump. Greatly appreciate it. Good luck with your new job at the DEQ. Yeah, there you go. Moving along to our next guest, Richard Barris, editor of the People's Pundit Daily, a nationally known expert on elections with a conservative focus. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's good to be with you.
All right, so Donald said he's out. Donald Trump says he's not doing the debate tomorrow. What do you make of it?
I think he's going to probably change his mind. I think we might wind up seeing him there after all. This is what he does. He needs something a couple of days before the caucuses, but I think it would be a mistake. I think it would be a mistake, and I think he knows that. So I think we'll probably see him change his mind.
Now, historically speaking, however, Ronald Reagan skipped Iowa. Ronald Reagan skipped a debate in Iowa back in 1980, and a lot of folks said that would hurt him. Obviously, it did not. He went on to become one of the maybe the best president of my lifetime, actually. So Donald Trump, I don't think he's going to change his mind. I don't think so, unless there's some. The only way he changes his mind is if he can parlay this somehow into a deal where him and Megyn Kelly call a truce, get together, sing kumbaya, whatever it is. Unless Donald Trump could turn this into a political positive, he's out.
Well, he really wants to run the table. And in Iowa, Iowa should not be a good fit. And like you said, historically speaking, that's absolutely true. Iowa doesn't really pick the nominee, typically speaking. But, he likes to win, and he wants to shut it down from the beginning. So,
well, let me ask you this. He's scheduled now, they tell us, or we're hearing, he is going to be at a veterans event benefiting wounded warriors. I mean, this does not hurt a guy who said the Veterans Administration, the VA, is a mess and it needs to be cleaned up. So if he goes to a Wounded Warriors event and has a bunch of veterans at his side, as opposed to going to some debate on the nightly news or whatever, I think this benefits him potentially.
Well, if he scoops it, yeah, because people are tuning in to see the debates anyway for Donald Trump. I mean, the viewership has been extraordinarily high. The reason is Donald Trump.
Well, yeah, 25 million for the first. Yeah, 25 million set an all-time record for cable TV, and it was a presidential debate. Pretty
right.
Incredible.
They're not tuning in to see Megyn Kelly.
Which I don't quite understand exactly, because I think she's far cuter than Donald Trump. Just as an aside. But, here's the thing. He's really gone after her hard, and I don't think her question was out of bounds or loaded. I think her question was pretty fair, actually. Listen, you've said all these disparaging things about women at different times here. So I don't think her question was out of bounds. And I don't quite understand why he has gotten so wound up with her.
Yeah, I don't know if there's something going on there that we don't know. I heard yesterday that there was some things that were sent out with the press release, and I went over it, and I didn't really see anything that was disparaging. It was a little bit of a tease, but it was only, you know, it was only a little poking fun at what happened last time. But apparently he took that to heart a little bit. But it was, you know, it's all in good fun. I mean, this is a contact sport. You know, so Donald's got to not show that he's got thin skin.
Nice. And, so we've got Richard Barris here on the line with us, the editor of the People's Pundit Daily. All right, Richard, where do you call home?
Well, right now we're in Florida and several places in Florida. But, I'm normally from the north, actually, but we relocated about 5 years ago. It's been good.
All right, so you've got your finger on the pulse of the political nation here. So give me an idea. Since midsummer, we have been told that Donald Trump cannot win by the pundits. He couldn't win because he insulted Mexicans when he announced his candidacy. He couldn't win because he insulted Megyn Kelly, for example. He couldn't win because he said we need to put a temporary lock on Muslims coming into the country. He not only does he continue to lead, he seems to be building that momentum. So now the pundits are saying, well, even if he becomes the nominee, he can't win the general election. Well, you know, I don't believe him. I don't believe him anymore.
No, you're right not to believe him. Anyone who's witnessed what this man has done over the last 6 months, and to think that he can't win a general election is just denying reality. The guy's held a lead. It's an absolutely unprecedented lead. He's leading by larger margins than Romney led a much smaller field in 2012. He's most of the summer led by larger margins than Hillary Clinton led Bernie Sanders in a three-man race, if you could even call it that. So what he's done here is nothing short of impressive. So to think that he can't do some magic turnaround and win over voters later down the road is nonsense. He's a master brander, and he showed us that. So, I think that, you know, listening to Charles Krauthammers of the world, they don't like to be wrong, but the fact of the matter is he played everybody, and I think you continue to make a fool of yourself to think otherwise.
Yeah, Charles Krauthammer, who I consider to be a genius, I do. I think the man's brilliant, and I think his books are brilliant, but he's wrong on this one. I think he's wrong for a variety of reasons, and people say, well, Trump's too liberal. Hello, that's why he can win a general election, because he does attract the union vote. He'll get union endorsements if he's the general election candidate for the Republicans because of the union work he's done in New York. He will get endorsed by unions. He will get union support. Well, he's just too liberal. Well, you've got to get somewhere in the middle to win this thing. Probably you can't be extreme left or extreme right potentially to win this thing. And the first step to curing America is getting elected. Thank you for stopping in, Richard. Greatly appreciate it.
You too. Have a great rest of the day.
There you have it from the People's Pundit Daily, Richard Barris on the Steve Gruber Show.